Happy Podcast Day, everybody. I have a literary agent on the podcast today, Louise Buckley with Zeno Agency. She is currently closed to submissions, but will be opening in the next few months, so make sure to keep an eye on her. She shares tons of information about herself and what she's looking for, and, you know, gives all, you know, answers the wonderful query questions to help give us some tips, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. Let's go ahead and get started. And could you start by telling me what drew you to publishing and wanting to be a literary agent?
Okay. So my story, my journey is that I've always been a reader, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do. You know, I didn't really know what career path I wanted to take. And so I kind of did what a lot of people do. And chose to study English literature at university. And then after I finished that, I still didn't know what I wanted to do. Everybody would say to me, "Oh, so you're going to become a teacher now, are you?" And I knew I didn't want to become a teacher. Or they'd say, "Oh, well, you're going to become a librarian now, are you?" And I knew I didn't want to become a librarian either. But I knew that I wanted to work with books. I knew that I enjoyed reading. And so I ended up getting a job in a bookshop. I worked for Waterstones, which, for anyone who doesn't know, is the biggest book retailer in the UK, physical book retailer.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. I loved hand selling books, talking about books, reading books all the time. But it paid minimum wage. The wage was really, really terrible. I knew that I couldn't live. I just couldn't be a bookseller living on that kind of wage all the time. And so I did some work experience at a publisher at Walker Children's Books here in the UK, and I really enjoyed it. I was in their editorial department, and I just loved having a kind of hand in what might be published and playing a part in that. And so I decided that I wanted to become an editor at a publishing company. And I was really lucky, incredibly lucky, because it's so competitive, certainly here in the UK, but I imagine in other countries as well, to get a job working for a publisher, particularly in an editorial department. But because I'd worked for Waterstones as well, and I knew about trends, I knew what was selling, what wasn't selling, and I'd read really, really widely. I somehow, combined with my work experience, managed to get a job working for Dawling Kindersley Publishers as an editorial assistant. And they are a really kind of more illustrated reference publisher, and I was in their travel department, so it was completely different in a way to what I'm doing now. But it's really great experience. They are part of, or they were certainly part of Penguin, and it meant that I was, even though I was in quite a small department, I was still part of a big publishing company. At the time, the travel guides industry, the physical travel guide industry has just totally diminished with the rise of the online world, meaning that you can search for anything online. And so unfortunately, back then, which I think was maybe 2009 to 2010 that I worked there, I was made redundant, and I thought that was the end of my publishing journey. But because I'd worked for a big publisher, I then landed a job as an editorial assistant for Macmillan Publishers in their fiction department, which was just like my dream.
Yeah.
And I was really, really lucky because I worked for three different editors, and they each covered different genres. So one published kind of crime and thrillers and women's fiction, like quite kind of glitzy women's fiction. And then the other two editors published science fiction and fantasy and horror. And as I, so I was there for 5 years, and as I kind of worked my way up to a sort of mid-level, I inherited authors, but I was also allowed to commission authors as well. And so I gained really invaluable experience in how, in the kind of internal dynamics of how a publishing company works, and how, but also how books are edited. You know, it gave me a kind of really brilliant understanding of story structure, and how, you know, how I as an editor can help improve an author's work. It was just really, really brilliant experience, and I really enjoyed being an editor, but I felt kind of constrained by, you know, I use this analogy that I was a small fish in a big pond, and mm-hmm. I wanted to be a fish in a small pond. I was struggling to kind of progress any further, and I wanted to work more closely with authors. And I think the idea of being an agent just kind of really, really interested me and excited me. And so it was kind of by chance, but I've been chatting to my colleague who sat next to me. She ran the science, well, she still does, she runs the science fiction and fantasy list at Macmillan. And she knows John at Xena Agency very closely, and she said, oh, you know, John's actually looking for someone to join him as an assistant, but also as a kind of, as a junior agent, to help expand the company and to help them kind of move it in other directions. And so historically, Xena has only really represented science fiction and fantasy. We're actually the biggest agency in the UK that represents science fiction and fantasy. And we represent Ben Aronovich, who's a Sunday Times number one internationally best-selling author. And we also are the UK representatives of Brendan Sanderson, who's mega huge, and we represent Peter V. Brett as well as many other estates of kind of famous mostly science fiction authors of the past. But I mean, John, you know, at the time he felt like he wanted, you know, I was quite a good fit because I understand science fiction and fantasy publishing because of having worked for the other two editors, but I also had worked on lots of other genres as well, so it meant that I could bring in authors writing in other areas and help expand the agency as well.
I love it.
So that's kind of how I've ended up where I am now.
That's awesome. What a wonderful journey, and I'm sure you're glad for all of the experience that, you know, you got in all those different stages of your career to get you where you needed to be now.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. So, you know, this next question is, when did your love for books begin? And it sounds like you've been a book lover for a really long time, but do you remember like a certain moment in your childhood when you were like really realized that you were like, oh my gosh, books are like the best thing in the world?
I do have one particular moment. You know, my parents had always read to me before bed. That was a really big part of growing up. But I do have this one moment. It was the summer holidays, so I had 6 weeks to 6 weeks off school when I was about seven, and I remember that I read The Secret Garden.
Mm.
And it was the longest book that I'd ever read. time, you know, it was, but I remember I found it so engrossing and I enjoyed it so much, and I was just so proud of myself for having finished this book that seemed so long to me, much longer than anything I'd ever read before. But it really inspired me. I mean, once I read that book, you know, I was down the library every week taking books out, as many as I could, and it kind of just set me on this path of reading, really.
I love it. I love that you have that particular memory of the, you know, the book too, that you were, you felt like it was like an accomplishment and, you know, kind of spurred that love. It's always good to remember. So my next questions are query questions, which I know lots of people love to get different agents' opinions on these things. So my first one is, do you think queries need to stick to a specified formula? Now, this isn't like your agency's submission guidelines, because those should be followed always, right? The golden formula of a query of just including the who, what, why, the stakes, you know, the title, the word count, and not trying to do anything gimmicky, I guess.
This is a tricky one to answer. I mean, generally, I would say that I would recommend to stick to the kind of guidelines and advice that is out there, because when authors have tried to do something quite gimmicky, it almost certainly falls flat, and I feel like it doesn't work, and it doesn't necessarily make them come across that well.
Right.
And also, I think the guidelines are there for a reason, because much of the information that is generally requested in query letters, such as a kind of blurb, you know, a little bit about the book, a little bit about the author, title, word count. All of those things are really important for the pieces of information for the agent. And so if you try to do something gimmicky, you kind of run the risk of not actually conveying the information that would be the most helpful to an agent. But also, I think authors, you know, they worry a lot about kind of getting it right. And, I mean, one of the things I want to reassure them of is that actually if you stick to the guidelines and you do send out something that maybe feels a bit like a template, that won't work against you. It will probably actually aid you in finding an agent, because you've made it easy for the agent to have all the information that they need.
Right. And I think I like what you said, you know, sometimes the gimmicky things can make the query fall flat, but I think there's something to be said for giving the agent something they know what to expect, what they're opening.
Yeah,
they're not definitely opening it and then they're like really confused about everything that's going on. You don't want to confuse them with your query letter.
Yeah. Because I mean, the reality is that agents receive so many queries every day that you want to stand out for the right reasons and not the wrong reasons.
Exactly. Good things to remember. So what for you would be your number one query no-no?
Okay. Bear with me whilst I look at my notes. Okay, my number one query, I guess my number one bugbear actually is when people don't address the query letters to the agent. I'm sure other agents have probably mentioned this before, but it is really, really common that I will receive a query that starts with "Dear Sirs."
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm a woman. there's only one of me, so it's not even multiple kind of sirs. Dear publisher. I mean, that's fairly annoying, because obviously I'm not a publisher. Dear editor, I mean, I do edit as an agent, but I'm not an editor. Again, that kind of shows a fundamental lack of understanding about what an agent is. I'm trying to think. I mean, another one that I sometimes get is the query addressed to the other, to John John at Zeno rather than to myself, and if he's not open for queries and it is just me, then I feel like people should have done their research. But in terms of, I mean, I've been asked before, you know, how could I address the person, you know, should I use their first name or their surname, should I say Miz or for whatever. I mean, me, that doesn't really matter. I think so long as you've got their name somehow, rather than agent, then you can't really go wrong.
Right. As long as you've addressed it somehow correctly, that is what's exactly. important.
Exactly.
And I do think it goes to show just that simple addressing it correctly shows they've done at least a little bit of research, or they're not just copying and pasting and sending it to a bunch of different emails.
Yeah, definitely. And agents like to feel like the author does actually want them to be their agent.
Yeah, definitely. You want to think like, oh, they searched me out, did a little bit of research, are excited about, me personally as their agent.
Yeah. Yeah. And the best way of doing that is addressing it to the agent.
Yes, very true. So my next question for you is, what things in the first pages that you receive will make you stop reading? What is just a hard no-no for you in those?
Okay. There are quite a few, so I'll go through some of the biggest ones, some of the most kind of common turnoffs to me, and I imagine for most other agents. I mean, they're not really in any particular order, but I guess one of my biggest peeves is starting with backstory or kind of too much exposition and not really getting into the heart of the story, because agents, as I mentioned, they do receive so many submissions every day. They don't want to have to wade through a kind of really long prologue with it's explaining the history of the world, say, before they get to the heart of the story. And the same goes, it's not just for agents, the same goes for publishers. Agents have to think like publishers. They have to think, what will sell, what will entice the publisher, and therefore what will entice the reader when they pick the book up. And so, too much backstory, definitely. So often I think I see authors who are particularly authors who don't have a huge amount of experience, and they don't always know how to convey the story, and so they tell the story as backstory rather than realizing that they can kind of weave it through more direct action. That's one point. Another thing that I see really commonly is a character either waking up or having a dream.
That's too much.
I understand, that is a common way of, I think I've seen it in films and I've often seen it in published books, but it's so common that it becomes cliche, and unless it serves a really strong purpose, it's really, really vital to your story. I would say try and come up with another way of starting your novel. And also, when a character wakes up, it tends to be that they wake up and then things happen to them, and they're quite a passive character. Whereas if you start your story with the character doing something, then it feels like then the reader reading it will feel like they are the character moving the story forward.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So there's more of a kind of propulsion of the character.
Definitely.
I don't know if that makes sense.
It does. So. It definitely makes sense. They're acting upon something instead of being acted upon, which is what we want. Definitely.
Yeah, exactly. I'd say those are probably the two I see the most commonly.
And I think I think at some point all writers struggle with the backstory and the beginnings. Beginnings are just so hard in general. Knowing where to start, your story can take a while to figure out, but you want to make sure that it's not jumping right into action that's too confusing, but you don't want it to be like, she woke up and brushed her hair, and have it be very boring in the beginning.
I understand, I'm not unsympathetic to how hard it must be for authors trying to get their first pages, right.
Yeah. But always, always good reminders of what is can make those first pages hard to get through.
Yeah.
So what is your favorite thing to see in a query? What gets you really excited when it pops into your inbox?
So I've been thinking about this, right? And I think it's not necessarily one particular thing, but the queries that always stand out to me are the ones where the author seems to really understand who they are writing for. So I think it means that they understand the market, and by that I mean the genre they're writing in. Because authors don't always know what genre they're writing in, but if an author knows the genre they're writing in and also shows an understanding of who their target audience is, then that can make their query letter really stand out. And I know that can be quite difficult because, often authors, they don't know who, when they start out writing, they don't know who they're writing for. They're just writing for themselves, or they're just writing a story that they want, that they feel has to be told. But if you can show a kind of market knowledge, like who are the comparison authors, you know, where would your novel, and I'm focusing more on novels here, should say, because that's my background. You know, I represent predominantly fiction, I guess I should say I'm not really covering nonfiction or children's as much, just because I don't have as much experience in those areas.
Yeah.
But I think particularly with fiction, if you can know what where your novel sits in the market, and then an agent will be impressed with your market knowledge. So to try and give a more concrete example, if you think you're writing a thriller, say, and you say in your query letter, I've written a psychological thriller that I think will appeal to readers of, I'm just going to give the biggest examples here, of Gillian Flynn and, I don't know, Paula Hawkins, is that the girl with then if the blurb then ties in with that, the style of the blurb shows that the story is in some way similar to those two authors, then it shows a market awareness.
Definitely. And yeah. I think it goes, I think as writers, you have to be a reader too, to have that market awareness. You need to read, greatly in the genre you're writing. But also it's good to read in other genres just so you can see different things. But having those comp books and knowing where your story fits on a bookshelf is super important. Because if you can't figure it out, the agent is probably going to be like, well, am I going to be able to figure it out?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you know it and you can sell it to me, you can make me think, well, that she's pitched that brilliantly, which means that I will be able to pitch it really well to publishers, and then publishers will be able to pitch it really well to retailers, and then the retailers should be able to do a really good job of selling it to the reader. So there's a kind of chain reaction here.
Definitely. Let's see. My next question is about previously self-published authors. So if you get a query from somebody who has previously self-published a book, what is your preference? Like, what would your tips be for them? And this is obviously under the idea that they're querying you for a brand new story, so not something that's already been self-published.
I would say there's no reason you can't submit something new to agents, even if you haven't had much luck with self-publishing. It doesn't mean you won't land an agent because of your track record. I think the confusion arises because lots of agents are not willing to take on books that have been self-published. And I do receive submissions from authors that say, I published this on Amazon last month, one of the main reasons why agents say no to books that have been self-published is that they are really hard to sell to publishers, because publishers can't sell them to retailers. Retailers have certain kind of slots, or we call them slots here in the UK, where they fit their books, and if they're presented with one book that was self-published but only sold, say, 20 copies, and one book that is a debut and has never been published before, they will always select the debut because it's an unknown quantity, whereas they would always see the self-published book as having kind of already had its chance. And so if the retailers won't stock the self-published books, then the publishers won't take them on, so therefore the agents, you know, from a business point of view, there is just no point in agents taking self-published authors on. But even just because you've self-published a book before, it shouldn't prevent you from submitting anything new to an agent, or make you worry about submitting anything new to an agent. You know, I certainly don't think negatively on anyone that's tried self-publishing. I mean, my mum self-published a book, and so, you know, and I helped her with that. And so I think it's kind of, you know, there's pros and cons to the different publishing routes. But I would say, if you haven't had any luck self-publishing, definitely try and go down the traditional route. I'm not saying it will be any easier, but it's definitely still an option.
Definitely. Good advice to have. I've started asking that question recently just because I've seen, you know, on the Twitter writing community of some previously self-published authors who, you know, want to have some more feedback from agents on that sort of thing. And I think, you know, maybe 5-7 years ago, and maybe still today, there's some agents who, you know, there's some bias and different feelings about self-published authors, so I just like to get some different feedback on it.
Yeah, no, I understand that, and it's a good question. It's one that I haven't actually been asked before.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. My next one is, overall, what would your tips or golden rules be for authors who are in the querying process right now?
I've written down 3 tips. I have loads of tips, but I just thought I'd share 3 that maybe haven't been talked about as much. They might have. But my number one tip is make sure it really is ready before submitting. So I guess this is kind of pre-submission.
Yeah.
But I think often, people are so kind of keen to submit that they don't necessarily, that the book isn't ready.
Right.
Probably one of the biggest problems I see in submissions. Often as well, I think people don't necessarily always seek out honest feedback on their book before they submit to agents.
Yeah.
I think that will be so invaluable to them. And by honest feedback, I don't mean passing to friends and family, because I think they're not likely to have the best interests at heart, and they will worry about offending you.
Definitely.
I mean thinking out people who are, who are probably readers themselves and have some kind of understanding of, like, story arc and character arc, and who are happy to offer you, really constructive feedback. So I would really recommend trying to find at least one, if not two, kind of trusted people. And if you're not able to do that, then either finding the right community or hiring a professional editor to give you that kind of constructive feedback, so that you can make sure that your manuscript is absolutely ready before submitting. My second tip would probably be to not put all your stock in one or two agents. I do see this quite a bit, and I think, well, it's certainly something that I've felt with some authors, particularly if they've wanted me in particular to represent them, and I've turned them down, and they felt, you know, incredibly disappointed by that. And I really do understand how disappointing it must be when you receive rejections, particularly when you've done so much research and you feel like that particular agent is asking for exactly what you've written.
Right.
Or if you've seen, if you've heard them talking, or you've seen them at an event, and you feel like, you know, they would be the kind of right agent for you, you know, kind of different levels. But I would say don't put all your stock in them. Do try and submit widely. I recommend everyone has a different idea, but I think if you submit in kind of tranches of 10 at a time, then you're kind of submitting fairly widely, and then maybe if you haven't heard back, or maybe wait until you've heard back from about 2/3 before submitting to another 10 agents. But also not thinking widely about who you submit to, and not necessarily submitting to agents in your particular country as well, which is why I'm kind of wanting to you know, appeal to people over the pond, so that I'm not just receiving the same type of submission from the same type of person over here. Because I think there's so much writing talent out there. So, you know, thinking more widely about who you might submit to, and also not necessarily ignoring more junior agents who are maybe not that well established, because often they are the best agents to approach, because they will have more space on their list, they will have more time to devote to you, and they will hopefully have more of a kind of hunger to prove themselves. So that can really work out for you. So really just submitting as widely as possible. And then I guess my third tip would probably be that if you're not having success, you know, don't give up, but maybe try writing something else whilst you're waiting to hear back from agents. You know, yeah. Try writing. I mean, if you've written a non-fiction book, try writing, I'd say, a fiction book or a children's book or an essay, or, you know, something to kind of, I think, to get your creative juices flowing, and to remind you why you really love writing in the first place.
Yes, I think that last one is awesome advice. Because I think querying and all that can be stressful and anxiety inducing, and just to keep writing, or, you know, try writing something different can help distract you from that.
Yeah, I know.
I love it. Well, good tips. So my next question is, when you're, you know, excited about an author, you've read their manuscript, you're, you know, on that phone call with them or the Skype call, what else are you looking for in an author, in a potential client?
So, I mean, for me, I'm looking for someone who shares my view. I mean, I think this is really important, and it goes both ways. You know, authors want to find an agent who gets the book, who shares their vision for the book. So normally I'll have a kind of in-depth chat, often predominantly about the editorial direction of the book, and, you know, with what kind of broader notes I think the author needs to work on. But I will usually tell them how where I feel the book sits in the market, who I feel its comparison authors are, and how I plan to pitch it to publishers. And I mean, usually that will be I will tell them all that, but it will be part of the conversation, because I want to hear their opinion too, and that might kind of change my opinion. I guess what I'm looking for is a kind of open-mindedness to working on this together.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that can sometimes be hard, because, you know, particularly when you've spent years or a very long time writing something, you might have a certain idea about how, you know, how it should be pitched, and also how it should be published. And the agents, you know, I'm the one with the kind of business and the commercial knowledge. You know, I might say, well, actually, I think we'd be better off going down this other route and kind of pitching it differently. And so I guess I'm looking for someone who is willing to be open-minded about changing their direction slightly.
I think that's important.
I mean, normally, in my experience, most authors, well, particularly my current authors, you know, the authors that I represent now, it's never been an issue, and we've always been on the same page right from the start.
Well, that's good. I think that's something.
I know it doesn't always work out that way.
Yeah. I think it's just something good for, you know, authors who are, you know, new to the experience. They're, you know, not sure really what that, like, agent-author relationship looks like. But I think it's good to get your head around the fact that it turns into more of a you know, a business creative partnership instead of just, like, this solitary thing that you do alone in your room.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, a good, you know, a good author agent relationship should feel like, you know, an agent is there to support you. I mean, the way I talk about agenting when people are, you know, ask me to describe my job is I say it is partly selling. You know, the selling aspect is a really big part of the job, but it's also the other part of it is kind of coaching and mentoring. And managing, and that's when it becomes more of a kind of a partnership, and you know, and a good author agent relationship should leave you both feeling kind of happy and that you're working together in the right way.
Definitely. And you know, sometimes that can, you know, unfortunately not work right away, or like you know, it might not work out with the first agent you talk to if you're on the author side, or you know, hopefully you can, both people in that interaction are able to be like, okay, this might not be the best fit for both of us.
Yeah.
Well, cool. So I just have a couple questions left. My second to last one is, what are you looking for right now? So what's on your manuscript wish list?
So at the moment, I would really like some more. Well, I don't recommend any crime or thriller, and I really enjoy reading. Like I love a good whodunit or a whydunit. But I just haven't quite found the right one yet. I mean, I predominantly represent niche fiction. A little bit of fantasy as well, but yeah, I think I would particularly like something with a kind of good meaty mystery to it.
Yeah,
that kind of keeps me turning the pages. You know, particularly if it's quite kind of pacing and suspenseful, causes me to ask lots of questions about what's happening. And also, I really like crime and thrillers that have a strong sense of place. So, like something like, I mean, I know it was published a couple of years ago, but something like The Dry by Jane Harper, which I just thought was so evocative because it's set in Australia. It's set in a really, probably much like Australia now, a really, really hot period in Australia. And that just, that the atmosphere, heat and kind of tension from the heat just really, you know, rose off the page for me when I was reading it. But also I think something with, I mean, I'd really love to find something that's like a kind of Sliding Doors type book, like something with an alternate timeline that maybe asks kind of, that looks at the road not taken. I really love books that pose a kind of what if question in a sort of twist on the usual reality kind of way, or something maybe with like a little bit of magic in, but in a real world setting. Those are probably the main things I'm looking for at the moment. So I am really, I do read really widely, and I'm not actually that prescriptive, but those are the particular things that I've got my kind of little antenna looking for.
Awesome. Well, I hope you get some of those things after people listen to this.
Me too.
So I have one last question for you. I have been told it is somewhat of a difficult question at times, but I would love to know what your favorite book is right now. This isn't your favorite book of all time by any means, just a book you've read recently that you really enjoyed.
Yeah, so over Christmas, I read a book called The Man Who Didn't Call by Rosie Walsh, which, I mean, I don't know, I mean, it's been a massive bestseller here in the UK. I think it's done quite well over on your side, but basically the premise is that a woman spends a week with this man that she meets while she's back visiting her parents. So she lives in LA, but she's come back to the UK to visit her parents. She meets him, she has the most wonderful week with him. They each go their separate way and they promise to meet each other at the airport when they've flown back from their respective destinations, but he is not there, and he doesn't answer any of her calls, he doesn't answer any of her messages, and she's left wondering, you know, what happened to him? Did she imagine being with him? Like, he just has kind of gone off the face of the earth. But it was a really interesting idea, a really brilliant concept, and the whole time, you know, you as a reader are left questioning what has happened to him. I just thought it was quite original. You know, it was an original twist on, I guess, a love story, but it's more of a mystery than a love story. It's really brilliantly done.
That sounds awesome. I like it. Well, cool. Thank you for sharing that with us. Thank you so much for chatting with me today and letting me get to know you and answering all my questions about queries and, you know, the literary agent side of publishing. It has been such a pleasure chatting with you.
It has been a pleasure being here and chatting with you too. Thanks so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
I hope you guys learned tons from that, and I love all the literary agents who join me on the podcast and share their time with us just to help authors who are querying out in any way they can. It's super helpful. So please make sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you find it, and share it with your friends, and reach out to me if you have any questions or just want to say hi at Rose Quinney, QUINNY, or find my website, which is rosequinco.com. And thank you so much for listening.